But one thing that is very important is have a very good manager, very good people that give you advices. And I didn't have this in the beginning of my career. It was me, my dad, and some people from Brazil. Like, we came from the jungle with no information.
Yeah.
But some people think in Brazil just Amazonas and beach, Rio. And we came from there and no information. Yeah. We didn't know some people and we trust in the wrong people, you know. And then in life, in everything, if you trust in the wrong people, you can lose a lot of things, you know. In general, time, money, confidence, and everything.
Yeah,
so, it makes sense.
It's not easy.
So, hello, and welcome to the MotoGP podcast, Last on the Brakes, or welcome back. Hopefully, you've been listening to or watching us before.
We've not been away that long, have we?
We haven't been away that long.
No, it feels like it because we recorded last in Assen. Yeah.
We did, indeed. So, yeah, we've got some of the hopefully most in-depth chats you'll hear with members of the MotoGP community. And you were just listening to a preview of what's to come on today's show, which was the one and only Eric Granado.
Yeah, Brazilian Moto E hotshot, potential for the cup standings overall title. Trying to avoid the word championship for the sake of
cup winner.
Being, that's it, yeah, over
then
this season.
Then you get into the grammar of reigning cup winner and you're like,
I know.
But yeah.
Been annoying. But Eric, well.
Rear tyre smoker, spectacular
yes,
also.
He is spectacular all over the shop. And he's a real sort of, he's a bit of a very well-known face in this paddock. He has been for many years, got a really interesting career. As you'll hear, carries the weight of a nation on his shoulders, literally, from Brazil. And I think he has possibly one of the most fascinating stories. And this particular episode, at the time of recording, we don't know what the state of the rider market is going to be by the time this actually comes out. But at the time of the recording, a lot of the conversations we had about the mistakes he made, about which championships and which teams he rode for early in his career, this and that and the other, really relevant to what's going on and what a lot of the riders, in particular Moto 3 and Moto 2, will be thinking about right now. So
really
some lessons
relevant.
To be learned.
Sorry if I looked distracted then. I thought we were going to get
I thought our camera member
was going
to get wiped out by a team boss, but never mind.
But no. So, yeah, I think it was, like you say, really relevant to be asking him about that. Obviously for him and seeing what he goes in the future, but also with all the stuff that's happening at the moment. We had a bombshell right before we started recording this one as well, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
With Maverick Viñales and Yamaha. So,
I know. Wow. I mean, old news now by the time you guys listen to this, but that is gives
Welcome
you an insight.
To the past.
I know. But Eric's chat with him, we didn't actually get into talking. We didn't really intend to talk about the rider market per se, but
just
it did lead us.
Into it.
Exactly. It did lead us into the question of the week this week, I think, which... For you guys, we want to know from you, comments below on YouTube or even on Twitter as well, hashtag MotoGP podcast. What is your perspective of the rider market? Some of the moves that you see riders, particularly from the lower categories, make? Is there too much of a rush to get to MotoGP or to Moto 2? Does it take long enough? You know, what are your thoughts? I'd love to know.
Like, are you more of a Zarco Dovi kind of vibe? Or are you like, no.
Late bloomer.
Just do the Jack Miller and at least you've made it there and then you've got time to learn it when you're there.
But part of the point of that is look at Jack Miller. Okay, after last weekend, the championship this year is going to be a bit harder. But it's taken him to 2021 to really mount a proper championship challenge in MotoGP. When did he join? 2014?
That's true.
2015?
That's true.
First year 2015?
15 must be, because Assen was 16.
Everybody's got their own way. So that's why I think it's such an interesting topic. I want to ask you guys about
it. Sure, yeah. So let us know on that. And then, take it away with Eric. Hope you enjoy this chat.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, mate.
Fan first.
Well, I mean, the first one's an easy one. It's basically just, how are you? How you doing? How you enjoying the season? Riding Moto E and then Superbikes as well. Busy year for you. How you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling happy. I think this is one of the best years in my life. You know, I changed a lot on the personal side. I changed a lot today, my lifestyle. You know, I'm living full time in Spain now and I don't race anymore in Brazil. So all my season is in Europe. So, yeah, I'm happy the results are coming and yeah, we are in a good way.
What made you decide to come over to Europe and live full time again? Obviously, you did it before, but you had it quite good in Brazil. You know, you're a superstar, you're kicking butt all the time. And but now you come back over here, you're doing Moto E anyways the last few seasons, but now Spanish Superbikes too. What was the motivation behind that?
Yes, you know, I start really my career in Spain in 2006. And after that, I didn't race anymore in Brazil. And then after I was out of the World Championship in 2014, that I had an injury on my back and I went to the European Moto2, I had not so many races, and then I went to Brazil to like have more races in my calendar. Hmm. And then after that, I was there with a good sponsor from Honda. But after 2 or 3 years, I really was thinking to stay just in Europe, because for my career was the best thing. And finally, we make this season only. And yeah, it's going well. The Spanish Superbike have a much higher level than Brazilian Superbike, even if I'm the superstar there and everyone wants to see me racing in Brazil. But, you know, I need to think on my career. I need to think on the future. I already won 6 championships in Brazil, so I want to win another things now.
Awesome.
Okay, that's cool. Well, because you're new to the podcast and new to sort of longer interviews with bigger exposure, last year what we were asking all the guests was like, how did you start riding? So we thought we'd do that with you as well. When you were a kid, how is it that Eric Granado gets his first motorbike? How did you start really getting into it?
Well, when I think that, I remember I'm getting old, you know? It's like already 20 years ago that I started. I started with 6 years old in Brazil. I really liked motorcycle, and I was always watching Valentino, Alex Barros on the TV when he were in MotoGP. And yeah, I was saying that I want to be a rider, and you know, Brazil have nothing support and sponsors for young riders, for children. You know, we don't have bikes for children. And my dad was an amateur rider in Brazil in the Brazilian championship. He was not so good, so he just
raced it.
he liked it, but he didn't have money. You know, this is sport. You need support, and you need full support. And when I had 6 years old, he gave me a bike, a 50cc that he bring from Argentina. But then I had the bike, but no championship. I had nowhere to race. And we found like 3 or 4 guys that was like 7 or 8 years old. And we did a championship with 5 riders. And,
wow, okay.
Did you win it?
The first year, yes. The first race I won.
But important one.
After, not so much. And then the championship I won. And then the second year, we had like 10 riders, and it was quite okay. But, you know, the level were low, and we didn't have tracks, nothing. And finally, I came to Spain. We had some contact with some people that told me about Cuna de Campeones. That is a championship that a lot of riders in the World Championship did in the beginning of the career. And then I came, and I was really, really back in the first races. And then I was improving. Finally, I won this championship, and 70cc, 80cc, 100 pre-GP, 125. And I was racing against riders that are in MotoGP now: Alex Marquez, Alex Rins, Oliveira, Navarro. Also Arenas, you know, every rider that Spanish riders, especially that are in the MotoGP and Moto2, I was racing with them in the beginnings. And then I was going up and starting some new categories, and finally arriving in the World Championship.
That's awesome. So it sounds like you literally created your own championship. Yeah, okay, I guess more your dad in order to try and start a career. Is that how you see it?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
My dad created that, but you know, if it wasn't this movement from him side, maybe I was like a soccer player now, you know, not a rider. But, you know, the main thing was to come to Spain to race, because today, 2021, we still struggle to have riders from Brazil, even if we have a category there for children that Honda is doing. But, you know, it's very difficult. All the sponsors, all the money go to the soccer. And it's difficult. You know, I am the only one in the World Championship racing. And we have like 1 or 2 or 3 riders in Europe from Brazil racing.
Yeah.
And if you compare to the Europe riders, it's nothing to do. So it's not easy for us. Also, come from another country, another culture, another language. Everything is different. So it's so difficult for us. But, you know, I hope I can help riders from Brazil arrive. You know, I really like the job that Oliveira is doing. He's a big friend, and he's helping the Portuguese guys. That's even cool. If Portugal is very close to Europe, but you know, it's similar to Brazil. We don't have support and no riders, and he's doing a great job. So I talk a lot with him. I really I'm really working with my dad and some people in Brazil to have in the next years a category for children there.
That's awesome.
Really cool, like, because okay, I'm gonna move forward then. We had a bit about Brazil kind of that I'd put at the end, because it is like, do you feel then like you're really representing Brazil? Obviously in Parque Fermé and stuff, you always say a few words of Portuguese at the end. I love it. You really like making sure that you're kind of showing where you're from and what you're about. Is that important to you as well?
Yes, it's so important for me, but I think also the sport is in, sorry. well, I think it's really important for me, but also really important for Brazil. You know, to people see that there is a Brazilian rider racing in the World Championship and trying to do good things and trying to arrive in a MotoGP and to be a great rider in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's also good for the people watching the races that don't understand English to know what I'm saying and understand that I'm there doing my job and, you know, I'm Brazilian. And I think it's strange for the people watch a Brazilian rider just speaking in English and any word in Portuguese. So I really like to do this, and I think it's nice for them too.
I think a lot of riders would take being the only rider of a certain nationality, might think of that pressure as sometimes a bit of a negative thing. It would get the better of them. But you seem to embrace that. Is that, do you enjoy the pressure of being the only rider, being the whole weight of a nation almost on your shoulder?
It seems like you do. I mean, the way you phrase that is like...
Yeah, but it seems like you do, right?
I think the difference for me than the other riders that... My country, I think, is one of the biggest in the world, and is much more people and much more pressure on my back, and it's a country that don't have support, you know? So from this side, it's a pressure, but from one side, it's good that I have support and I'm the only one, but from another side, I would like to have 5 or 6 more riders, and then we have more support, and then we have more possibilities, you know? So yeah, I think it's nice, and I take this like more power than bad things, you know?
That's really cool.
And I'm really proud to be Brazilian and proud to represent my country. And I think from this side is a good thing for me.
That's cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, the other thing is, like you say, there's not much kind of motorcycling history in Brazil. Obviously, there's Alex Barros, who's represented and been a winner in the Premier class. But then on four wheels, Brazil is one of the most successful nations in the world. You got Fittipaldi, PK Senna, those all-time greats. What is the difference? And do you also take inspiration from those guys in motorsport or in just sport in general and being from Brazil?
Yes, on four wheels, we really had great champions. You know, Senna, I think, was one of the best drivers in the world for me. And I really have him like an inspiration. And I really already saw all the movies and books and everything from him. And I don't know, I think the karts, the go-karts from the beginning had a lot of support in Brazil, when we still have a lot of championships with go-karts in Brazil, a lot of karting and tracks that the riders can race. And we have support for wheels in Brazil. We have a very good national championship there, with the GT cars, with the V8 cars. So a lot of sponsors. And on the other side, on the motorbike, there is no big support like the four wheels, you know? But I think this is a transition. One thing that's I think really helped a lot to create the championships and create sponsors is have a track that have a race there. So Formula One is in Brazil, a lot of years. And, you know, finally it creates a circle of sponsors, rider and everything.
Yeah.
Like in the years of Alex, we had Jacarepaguá in Brazil, in Rio. And he had support from the government, from the country. And I have nothing of support from my country, you know.
Yeah.
I have sponsors that are related with motorcycle, but the country never helped me, you know. It's different from here. The federation helped the riders, everything. I have nothing. I just have, hey, good luck, do the best, you know?
We love you.
Yes, and this is difficult,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Finally, the cars, because of the tracks also, it helps a lot. You know, we don't have, for now, we don't have any track that can do a race with the motorbike.
Yeah.
I was racing in Brazil in the Brazilian Championship, in the tracks that was not good for bikes. The riders were dying and it was dangerous. And I was racing there with a little bit of margin to don't do a big mistake and have a big injury, because if I ride there, I ride there like I ride here, and I have a crash, can be very dangerous. So this is not nice, it's not good. If one rider die or have something in there in Brazil, is a very bad thing, you know, and it goes back a lot. So this in the last year was happening a lot. A lot of riders have big injuries. So this is one thing that's very difficult for us. But it's a process, like I said. We are also working to have in the next years maybe a track that can receive MotoGP or Superbike, you know, a race with of two wheels and a world championship. So we will see. I hope I can help it and this can happen.
Do you feel at least since you've come over to Europe, there is almost support for you because you're Brazilian, you're the only one? Like, because I know when it was announced you're coming to MotoE, it was like, oh, fantastic, Eric's back. You know, it's great seeing the representation of Brazil. But there has been that sort of support there for you, that appreciation of like you representing that nation here in Europe?
Yes, yes. The people helped me a lot there. You know, to be honest, I would like to be on Moto2 or MotoGP like every rider.
Yeah.
But for now, MotoE is good for me. I'm happy with the job we are doing and other support I receive in Brazil. For sure, the sponsor side is not the best of the world. But I think comfort to Spain so early makes me like more one of them than one from Brazil. So everyone here know me from the many years racing here. So this is good also to have opportunities in other teams and in other categories. That's why I think I'm still here.
Okay, that's cool. So, all right then, going back from the Brazilian chapter, we'll go back to you come into the World Championship. You were super young when you made your debut. Had some tougher times as well. Then you ended up in European Moto2 and you won that. Talk us through that kind of time in your career. First coming here when you were so young and then making the decision to go to the European Moto2 Championship and kind of getting back onto the top there.
Yes, I think it was a big mistake from my side to come so young. I think I'm still the youngest in Moto2 in history to race.
Yeah, I think you are.
How old were you, days and stuff?
Yeah, no, it's like...
I did 16 and the week later I raced in Silverstone.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. It's really young. There's been a couple 16, like Fermin did some and he was 16 then.
Yeah, but
I
you
think
know,
you are the...
but I was racing with Mark Marquez and Scott Redding and they were passing me and I was like, these guys are from another world. It's not possible, you know? And I was not ready yet. The only thing that I did this decision was because I have like the same body of now with 16 years old.
Right.
I was already with the same weight, more or less. And, you know, Moto3, you know, the weight is very important. And I was racing this 125 GP in the Spanish Championship. I did the fourth in the championship. And this year, Rins won. Second, Alex Marquez. Third, Bagnaia. Fourth was Antonelli, and then I was fifth or fourth, something like this. And I was struggling a lot already with the weight, and I had a proposal for Moto2, and you know, put you on my side, you know, world championship. Yeah. I had a 3 years contract.
15 years old signing.
Yes,
that.
Yeah. And I say, wow, this is my dream. I need to go for this. Yeah. I'm ready. I go, but I was not ready. I had a lot of crashes and I did some mistakes. The team also did help me a lot to arrive, you know, because I arrived there, I just knew how to ride. And I arrived in the box and I say, the bike is doing this. And they were asking, what do you want? I say, I just want to be fast. You know?
Yeah.
I had no experience. If I go now there and I say, wow, I have this movement in the front, maybe we can change the spring and preload and everything. I didn't have the experience, you know? Yeah. And finally I went to Moto3, 2 years. But you know, I was like no eating. I was feeling hungry all the time, and I was 10 kilos more than Efren Vasquez and all the riders. Yes. So it was impossible for me.
It's like even just now, like Nicola Antonelli is a good example. Like put you and Nicola together.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Even if I can be the best, but there is the weight, is the physical, you know?
Mm.
And I tried my best in these 2 years until I had the injury in Australia, because I was having a lot of crashes because I went to open the trial too early and break later to take the gap, but it was not possible, you know? And then I had a big injury on my back. I broke 5 vertebrae. And then I lost four races, and then I say, no, my category is not this one. I need to go to Moto 2. I had some proposal for a world championship, but I say, no, I need to go back, do the European championship, do the right thing.
Yeah.
And then I won the championship in 2017.
He dominated the championship in 2017.
Yes, it was good. I was very fast.
Yeah.
I was doing great lap times. And finally, I had a proposal to go to world championship again. This time I was already ready to go. But I had a problem with the team. The team changed the chassis in February before I started the preseason. Yeah. I was ready to race with Kalex, the bike I won the European Championship, and then they changed to Suter, a chassis that was already not fast and not good.
It wasn't as competitive as it was before.
Competitive, yeah. We were the only team with Suter chassis.
Yeah.
And me and my teammate were crashing every race three or four times. And then in the middle of the season, we finished it because it was not good for me. I was getting injury, and I say it's not.
Especially when you've come from showing like on a European level, which is a high level. It's not world championship level quite, but it's a high level championship. Yes. When you've got those 1-1-1-1-1-1 in the results, it must be.
Yeah, I won six races in the championship, and the lap times we were doing were very good.
Yeah.
In this time we're Honda engine for both. For CEV and World Championship, so the lap times was good to compare.
Yeah.
The bike were similar, and you were like always 0.6, 0.7 to the World Championship. That's not bad. And then in the World Championship with the Suter chassis, it was impossible for me to go faster than 1 second to the first, and I was doing the maximum. And then in the middle of 2018, we finished, and then 2019 Moto E.
Yeah.
To be honest, I was expecting to do Moto E 1 year, maximum two, and then go back to Moto 2. But finally, the proposals I had was not the best. In the Moto E, I was still feeling that I need to finish the job that I had to do in the first year, but I didn't make it from mistakes from my side. And I think this year we are in a good way. We are doing great things. Even if the lucky is not really on my side, but I think now it's coming.
You've had some genuine bad luck as well. It's easy to be like, especially like when we talk about or write about the sport, because we're the championship and done it, you have to be like, oh, bad luck and be kind about stuff. But sometimes there are things where you're like, how can this have happened?
Yeah.
It's like genuinely just like, oh. Of all the people, why is it the person on pole?
Yeah.
Not that it's like more or less important for the rider, but it just seems to be.
Yes. But you know, it's like I'm saying now, you know, maybe things don't go like you want in life, you know. You need to go how the life brings, you know. Now I'm on Moto E, I'm happy. For sure, if I have opportunity for Moto 2 in the future, Moto GP, I would take it. But now I really think more to do some decisions than compared to the beginning, you know. Before I did some mistakes, maybe when I won the championship in the European Championship, maybe I had to stay one more year and wait for another team. I don't know. But now I'm 25 and I really think more what I'm doing, and I think this is better for my life. But you know, the time flies and we need to go forward, you know.
When at the time of recording this, this is going to be like posted in about a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
But obviously for the listeners listening or watching, we're recording this in Austria. And right now there's so much talk about contracts. We had Raul Fernandez confirmed last week at Tech 3, but that story is a lot more complicated than it is on the surface. And then what that will, with Rossi retiring as well, that triggers a lot of the Moto 2 and Moto 3 riders now taking some very important decisions in their career and their life. What sort of advice, I guess, could you give riders in a similar position to where you found yourself? When they're younger, they might be quite heavy and they're in Moto 3 thinking, I need to go to Moto 2, but maybe they shouldn't. What's your perspective now? If you could go back, what would you do differently?
Well, I really think you have to do the decision and take everything in account, you know, not just what you think is the best for you. You have to think what's the best for the future, you know, not for now. So maybe see what you can have from the team, maybe if it's more than 1 year or two of contract, because this make the difference, especially when you are young. You need time to understand.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say that Jack Miller was crazy to go in MotoGP so young, But you know, if you give him time, like Honda did, like 3 years of contract,
yeah,
then you can think about it, you know.
It's the thing, it's crazy if you do it for a 1 year contract.
Yes,
but
it's crazy.
They are willing to give you the time.
Yes, yes.
Maybe it's not as crazy.
Yeah, so I think every team you need to give the time to happen, and to the rider, even if he's very talented, he needs the time to understand the things, you know. So the advice I give you is like make the things step by step and think on the future, because maybe you just think on now, and then in the future you have to do like two or three steps back to go forward again, you know, and you lose time.
And what do you think of that rush at the moment? People so keen to just, get me up a category. I'll be in MotoGP in 2-3 years. Let's go. But like, well, no, just lots of the riders just seem very keen with it. When you think about the rumors and seen lately, it just seemed like there's, I'm now starting to think in terms of trends. It's like a rider comes from Junior World Championship. They get a rookie season in Moto3. Then they're like, right, season two, I'm going for the championship. And then I'm going to Moto2, rookie year. Then I'm going to fight for the championship, and then I want to go to MotoGP.
Yeah, this is a dream.
It's a dream scenario, and it's kind of what I think, look, being between lines, lots of people aspire to. Is that the right thing to do for you? Is that something that they should aspire to, everybody?
Yeah, this is depends on the rider, depends on the thing, depends on the lucky also.
Hmm.
You know, for example, one rider that I really think that have a great career is like Zarco. He was like 3 or 4 or 5 years in Moto2. But he gave his time. He won a championship. He continued one more year because he won the right opportunity. And then when he arrived in MotoGP, he was ready.
Hmm.
The first race in Qatar, he was first. Yeah, and then he crashed. But you know, he said, the year before he went to World MotoGP, he said, I won the Monster Tech 3 ride. And he waited one more year, won the championship again, and then he went there. Alex Marquez also wait to the moment that he think he was the right moment, you know.
Yeah,
so you know, this can be good, can be bad, you know. Maverick did just 1 year and then jumped to MotoGP. Mir did the same, Raul is doing the same now. Lecona was up, maybe he was ready, he was not, I don't know. Not the rider needs to
a lot of difference. And then when you look as well, that the person who challenged one of the fastest to appear in MotoGP was actually like a 30-year-old Italian man who's ridden every bike on the grid. Dovi emerges as actually the guy who really took it to like the younger guy. It's interesting the differences between different people.
Yes, yes. So yeah, it's like I said, for me, maybe I could have won the first year in Moto E, and then the year next, like Garso, I was in Moto 2. But the opportunity came for him, not for me.
This is
the life, you know, this is how the things go. He already there 2 years, did a podium last year, and good for him. If my time will come, we'll see. So this is very difficult, and it's difficult to understand also what you can do and what's the opportunity you have to take. But one thing that is very important is have a very good manager, very good people that give you advices. And I didn't have this in the beginning of my career. It was me, my dad, and some people from Brazil. Like, we came from the jungle with no information. But some people think in Brazil just Amazonas and beach Rio. And we came from there and no information. Yeah. We didn't know some people, and we trust in the wrong people, you know. And then in life, in everything, if you trust in the wrong people, you can lose a lot of things, you know. In general, time, money, confidence, and everything.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
It's not easy.
We got some quick fire questions to ask you, but before we do, I just want to ask one more thing. You said at the beginning of the podcast, you've come moving to Europe, doing a full season in Europe, Moto E and Superbikes, to further your career. So where next? What's happening next year?
Well, you know, there is
sorry to put you on the spot,
some things on my head, you know. We are working in two ways, you know. For sure, continuing Moto E is an option. Even if this year we can win, is an option. Also, we have some talks with the Moto2 teams, but I really will think on this possibility, because I want a great bike and a great team to help me to go forward, because I can't lose time anymore.
Yeah.
I'm 25 years old and I want to be there to make the difference, not to be
just... You're making
just...
me feel so old now.
Yeah, but you know, if you see Raul going with 20 years old to MotoGP, you say, yeah, I can't lose time anymore, you know. But also I have a very good support from Honda Brazil and Honda in general that wants me to be on the World Superbike.
Cool.
I had some proposal from some teams, from a team from Honda to race there. So I would speak with them and I will see what is best for my career. But for sure, I want to go up and try to achieve some good things.
Awesome.
Cool. Brilliant. That's good to hear.
Quick fire.
So the first one, we normally ask this first, in case you don't know the answer straight away, you can have a bit of time.
Okay.
Which three people, dead or alive in history, would you invite to a dinner party?
Ayrton Senna.
So far we have the same dinner party.
Yes. Ayrton Senna, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Wow.
Okay, now no, but great choice.
And people that I don't know, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, Alex Marquez chose, like, I think his brother and his friends, and we were like, no, come on.
No, I want strong people. Ayrton Senna, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Lewis Hamilton.
I feel like you're going to have to keep the Portuguese calm for Lewis Hamilton to understand you guys.
That is awesome.
That's cool. That would be a good dinner party.
Right, next question. Which track, not on the calendar currently, would you like MotoGP or MotoE to go to?
Even if he's not ready to receive Interlagos.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yes.
Minus the safety is good, right?
It's so cool.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, so also need to apologize for how I pronounced this last time.
We.
I've been schooled on Instagram. Hey, Mike Falcone
is
who this question comes from. Who helped you get where you are that we don't know about?
My dad. Yes, I think he's the main person.
If he was the amateur biker and then bought you the bike and everything, it sounds
starting
like he
the
was
championship.
I love that. You literally just started during competition. Cool. Like.
Awesome. Which day in your life would you like to relive? Not to do it again, but just to experience it again.
Wow. I think the day I won my first race in MotoE. It was amazing because, you know, there was three things that were crazy. I won my first race in the World Championship. I could listen to the Brazilian anthem. And then in the afternoon, it was a Nicky Jam show on the track. And I'm a very big, big fan of him.
Yeah.
I already saw his movie and I was like going crazy. And then in the day next, I won the second race. And I was in the MotoGP party. What's the name?
The gala. Prize giving.
The gala to give the... And it was like a dream for me because I was watching all my life the gala with the riders receiving the trophy and then the medal. And I was there receiving my medal. So it was very emotional
for
me.
That's awesome.
And I think this was a moment that I would relive.
Really like that. Cool. Last one.
And then what's your personal or professional motto? Or if you don't have one, what would it be?
My motorcycle...
No, motto, as in like your personal catchphrase, something which you tell yourself before a race for motivation or a phrase that you live by, a sentence.
Like a phrase.
Yeah.
Make every second count. I have a tattoo here.
Cool.
Perfect.
It's definitely one that you're fully committed to then if you've got it written on you.
Nice. Awesome.
Okay. Thanks so much, Eric. That's it.
Thanks
really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. Really enjoyed getting to know a bit more of your career from your side.
If you want, you can stay here all the day. I have that. I'm sorry.
It's a bit hot. Maybe you can come back for a second episode.
Yeah.
Right? Awesome.
Yeah,
hey.
Also, thanks, please mate. Do turn up for the press conference later, yeah?
Yeah. Good.
Thanks so much.
Perfect.
Thank you.
So, Eric Granado. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Rather annoyingly, but not annoyingly, it was just nice afterwards. He did give us a couple more stories after he actually left and before
so
we recorded
so
this
much
intro
more
and outro.
To say. It's like, well, come
I know,
on
yeah,
then.
Well, we'll have to do a second episode with him. Things like what it's really like when he first moved over to Europe. He said, I won't give it all away, but he did things like fly on a Thursday from Brazil to race and then fly back to Brazil race in Europe on Thursday that weekend
I've
and then fly back
that
to Brazil on Sunday.
One time as a fan.
Did you?
To go to F1.
Oh my God.
And it was hard enough when I didn't have to do anything in between that and just go and sit down.
Unreal. Unreal.
I can't imagine.
I mean, kudos to him. I mean, that goes to show, you know, coming from literally an entire other continent just adds a whole new dynamic of pressure and difficulty to make it a career out of it. So kudos to Eric. No idea how he's going to perform this weekend after this, but hopefully he's done well.
I think that's a good wrap up on that one, isn't it?
We have not decided who our guest is going to be in Silverstone.
We haven't. So that might be an opportunity. Oh no, not with this one. When you've hopefully watched the Jorge Martin episode before this one, you'll see then...
It's probably useless us actually saying that, isn't it?
Asking you to tell us some feedback for who you might want to see in the future. But not just for Silverstone. Anyone at all that you want to hear from for the rest of the season or even going forward after that, let us know your thoughts. There's plenty of interesting people in the paddock. And we've been through a few of them now, but there's plenty more to go. If there's anyone you're really dying to hear what they think about some things, then just let us know. Hashtag it, attack us personally, leave it in the comments. You know, there's plenty of ways to get in touch.
See you next time.